Frontline Faith, the Nehemiah Chronicles. If you recall, in chapter 1, Nehemiah, cupbearer for King Artaxerxes I of Persia, he is ministering in the king's court, and he receives news from his brother that Jerusalem still lay in ruins. The temple's been rebuilt, but the walls are still in shambles. And he becomes burdened in his heart, and he weeps and mourns and fasts for days, the whole time praying and seeking God's face. And so now we move from Nehemiah being on his knees before God in chapter 1 to chapter 2, where he's on his feet before the king. It was in the year 1269 that Kublai Khan, the powerful leader of the Mongol Empire, in 1269 he heard part of the story of Jesus Christ. And his heart was so moved, he wanted to know more. And so he sent emissaries from Peking. You can see it on the map, kind of, but it's on the far eastern coast of China. And he sent emissaries thousands upon thousands of miles all the way to Rome to see Pope Gregory the X. The emissaries were bringing a message from Kublai Khan to the Pope. And the message was this, quote, "Send 100 wise men of the Christian religion, and so I shall be baptized. And when I shall be baptized, all my barons and great men will be baptized, and their subjects baptized, and so there will be more Christians here than there are in your parts." Wow. You talk about an open door. But what actually happened? Pope Gregory ignored the letter. Can you imagine how the history of Asia and the world would have been so altered had that happened? What did Pope Gregory the X do? He sent two Dominican friars that he didn't like. They started out on their journey. They got as far as Armenia, way less than halfway to Peking. And these two went, "Oh, this is too hard. This is too hard a trip." And they turned around and came back home. And so passed the greatest open door to missionary outreach in the history of the Christian church. 1269. So here we are now coming in Nehemiah chapter 2. And as I said a moment ago, Nehemiah is no longer on his knees before God. He's on his feet before the king. He's prayed to God. Nehemiah is going to get his opportunity. God is going to open the door. God is going to enable Nehemiah to do what he has placed upon his heart. In 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 12, Paul said that an open door of ministry is before me. Paul went on to say again in Colossians 4 and verse 3, that he was asking the people of the churches of Colossae to pray that a door of ministry would open up so that he could speak forth the ministry of Christ. In this chapter, we get some very valuable lessons about open doors and the God who holds the keys to them. Nehemiah teaches us what to do when the door opens. I'm sorry about the PowerPoint. It got saved and not keeping the same format, and so it's not working, so you're going to have to ignore it. In Nehemiah chapter 2, let's begin in verse 1. And it came about in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, that wine was before him. And I took up the wine and gave it to the king, and now I had not been sad in his presence. So the king said to me, "Why is your face sad, though you are not sick? This is nothing but sadness of heart." Then I was very much afraid. I said to the king, "Let the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate and its gates have been consumed by fire?" Then the king said to me, "What would you request?" So I prayed to the God of heaven. I said to the king, "If it please the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it." Then the king said to me, the queen sitting beside him, "How long will your journey be, and when will you return?" So it pleased the king to send me, and I gave him a definite time. And I said to the king, "If it please the king, let letters be given me for the governors of the provinces beyond the river, that they may allow me to pass through until I come to Judah. And a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress which is by the temple, for the wall of the city, and for the house to which I will go." And the king granted them to me, because the good hand of my God was on me. So Nehemiah, he goes on weeping, praying, fasting until God opens the door. We are what we are in part because of the opportunities that God sends our way. And so here we have today Nehemiah before the Persian king, and we're going to learn some things about what to do when we are presented with an open door. The first thing is that we must be patient when you seek an open door. This is something you can read right past in the first verse of chapter 2 and miss. It says, and it came about in the month of Nisan. Nisan is in the spring. This is about the equivalent of our April on the Hebrew calendar. But if you go back to chapter 1 and verse 1, you will see that Nehemiah receives his burden in the month of Chislu, and that's 4 months earlier. So well over 100 days have come to pass since Nehemiah had received his burden. Nehemiah is showing us, people, that in between the call of God on your life and the opportunity to fulfill that calling, there is a need for patience as God's perfect timing is revealed. We get the call of God, and don't we just want to run immediately? Don't we want to say, okay, let's go? And then God says, I've given you the call. But you got to remember that I sent the Apostle Paul away to Arabia for 3 years in the desert before I let him at you. I had to prepare his heart and get him right and ready. And God does the same thing with us. He gives us the call. And then we have to be patient while we wait and seek for God to open the door. I want you to notice a couple of things from Nehemiah about this matter of waiting for the open door. Nehemiah had reasons for waiting. Why did 4 months elapse between Nehemiah's receiving the news about Jerusalem and his request to the king to go there? Oh, you can open up the commentaries, and I did this week, and you can find a number of explanations out there. Some commentators have gone out on a limb trying to explain this. They've got no facts to back it up, but they've gone out on a limb and they've speculated, well, you know, the cupbearers, they worked in a 4-month rotation, and so Nehemiah wasn't on his rotation at this point, and so he was off, and it was 4 months before he came back before the king. Plausible, but we don't know if that's the truth or not. I read another commentator that said, you know, many times, and this is true, that kings had winter palaces and they would move to a place that's warmer during the winter. And so maybe since this happened in the winter months, maybe King Artaxerxes I was at his winter palace in warmer climates. You know, maybe he went to Hawaii or something to the beach, you know, and was enjoying that. And he came back when spring came around. I don't think it's that complicated. I think Nehemiah was just patiently waiting on God to present the right opportunity to make his case known before the king. He was saying, God, you've called me to this. God, I'm going to trust you to open the door at the right time. Oh, folks, seasoned saints of God understand this principle. Our timetable and God's timetable rarely match up. Okay? We want instant answers, but God's timetable, God's timing is always perfect. And we also have to remember that God's delays are not God's denials. How many times have we been guilty of receiving a call from God and we force the issue in our time rather than God's time? Nothing happens, and so we go, oh, I guess I was wrong, and that wasn't what God wanted in the first place. And we think that God is denying the request of our heart. Not so. Oftentimes, it is simply not God's denial, it's God's delay. And God's saying, hold on, the time's not right. So you just patiently wait on me, and I will present the time. So Nehemiah had reasons for waiting. He also was ready while he waited. He didn't just give up and say, oh, forget it. He was ready. He was waiting expectantly for God to open the door. Now, that's not easy to do. As the days drew on, the burden was growing heavier and heavier and heavier upon Nehemiah. But he didn't waste his time worrying or fretting about it. The closing of the last verse in the previous chapter indicates that every day Nehemiah is praying, waiting for God to open the door, waiting for God to give him that moment of mercy in the sight of King Artaxerxes I. I want to let you in on something. Waiting time is not wasted time. We Americans are so guilty of that. Oh, if you're not busy, you're lazy. No. Waiting on God is not wasted time. And folks, also remember that God's pause is not permission to give up. Be like Nehemiah. Watch and pray. Be ready to move, though, when God says go. And so what happens is eventually God will open the door. Now that brings us to the next thing we need to see. Be prudent when you see an open door. People will often say things like, man, soon as I see a door open, I'm going through it. Well, be careful, because like in that picture, it might be a trap door. Instead of going through, you might fall. Not every opportunity is a door that God has opened. Wow. I'm going to say it again. Not every opportunity that is before you is a door that God has opened. So therefore, we have to be wise. We have to be prudent. That means carefully smart. We have to be prudent in any time that we see what appears to be a break or an open door that we've been waiting for. Nehemiah, when God opened the door, he did not just dash impetuously to the task the moment that the need dawned upon him. In his conversation with King Artaxerxes, he shows a very wise caution as he feels out what's going on with the king. What we see is that Nehemiah showed composure. Now keep in mind, this guy's been praying, mourning, fasting privately, bearing this burden for 4 months. Now suddenly one day King Artaxerxes sees something in the face of Nehemiah and goes, hey bud, what's the matter? Verse 1, Nehemiah tells us he'd been hiding his emotions, covering up his troubled spirit in the presence of the king prior to this day. It's likely that servants in the presence of the king were required to be happy and joyful. One of the things I get tickled at Civil Air Patrol, where I serve as a chaplain, when we're at our meetings on Monday night and I'm with the cadets and it's a military format, and no matter how crummy a time the cadets are having, when a senior officer looks at the cadets and goes and asks a question like, how are you, how is it going, or how are you doing, I'm going to impose on Daniel, what is the answer? Outstanding, sir, with a smile on your face. Same thing when you're before the king. So he's trying to hide this. But in verse 2, King Artaxerxes notes this and he says, why is your face sad though you are not sick? And the king's observant and he goes, this is nothing but sadness of heart that I see in you. You know what Nehemiah said then? He said, then I was very afraid. He was afraid he was going to lose his life. You didn't frown before the king. You could lose your head over that. But then you come to verse 3, and you see the way that Nehemiah answered. Let the king live forever. But then he's honest. He says, why shouldn't my face be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate and its gates have been consumed by fire? Now, it'd be very tempting for Nehemiah to just say everything that's on his heart at this point, to go, hey, you know, and God has called me to go back there and rebuild it. But he didn't. He's very prudent. He keeps his composure about him. And he chooses his words very carefully. Notice what he said. The city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate. We don't get that in our culture. But Nehemiah just put salt in Artaxerxes' oats. You know the saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink? You can make a horse drink if you put salt in his oats, and he'll get thirsty enough and he'll want to go drink. The Persians, in their religion, in their idolatry, practiced ancestral worship. And tombs of ancestors were considered very special and sacred places. And so when Nehemiah just says, you know, and the tombs of my forefathers are in ruins, are desolate, are abandoned, that got Artaxerxes' attention. That was something he could relate to in his pagan religion. You see, what Nehemiah did was, he knew, he had been observing, he knew this man, and he knew his soft spot. If Nehemiah had said at this point, hey, I just want to go back and rebuild the walls, it probably wouldn't have happened. But he kept his composure. He was prudent. Not only did he show composure, but Nehemiah sought confirmation. In verse 4, the king recognizes, you know, Nehemiah is looking for more than just a sympathetic ear. And so the king then asks Nehemiah, what's your request? And that door that started cracking is now starting to swing wide open, isn't it? Now Nehemiah has to decide, is this the opportunity that I've been waiting for and praying for? It appears to be, but did you see what he said at the end of verse 4? Before he just jumped through that door, he wanted to make sure it wasn't a trap door that was going to lead to him losing his head. And he says, so I prayed to the God of heaven. He doesn't tell us the words of the prayer, but it's probably something like this. Nehemiah in his heart just went, now, Lord? Lord, is it now? And God's Spirit gave him the green light. Here's another something for us when it comes to open doors. The initiative for opening the door of service is always God's initiative, not our initiative. Never proceed through an open door without praying about it. Before you continue through an open door before you, you need to go to God in prayer and get His confirmation about it. So let's move to the third principle that we get about open doors from these eight verses in Nehemiah 2. Be passionate when you step through an open door. Remember the picture of this dog. The door is open, and once he's decided to go, he's going with everything he's got. He is thrilled to be out and through that door. Nehemiah sends up his insta prayer to God, and God in some way gives him the green light in his heart. And then beginning in verse 5, Nehemiah, with everything he's got, he goes through that door with a passion. Once you've got the green light from God, don't doubt the will of God. Go. Because you know what happens if you doubt the will of God at that point? You'll go back through the door the other way. You'll retreat. Because as soon as you go through the door, you're going to have problems. And boy, when we go through these chapters that are yet to come in Nehemiah, Nehemiah is going to have a lot of headaches and problems. And if you doubt that that's God's will, you're going to go right back through that door and it's going to close on you. So let's get some lessons about passion when you step through the door of opportunity that's given to you by God. Again, I apologize for the PowerPoint. The first thing you want to do is you want to utilize the strength of an opportunity. Utilize the strength of an opportunity. Notice the extent of Nehemiah's requests in verse 5. He said, "If it please the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it." Notice how he slid that in there again about the tombs. Then in verse 6, the king says, "Okay, but how long are you going to be gone?" Tells you a little bit about the relationship that Artaxerxes and Nehemiah had. Nehemiah thought he was valuable. "I want you to come back." I mean, Artaxerxes said, "I want you to come back, Nehemiah." And then, look at the passion here of Nehemiah, utilizing the strength of this opportunity in verses 7 and 8. Nehemiah says, "If it pleases the king, let letters be given me for the governors of the provinces beyond the river, that they may allow me to pass through until I come to Judah, and a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forests, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress which is by the temple, for the wall of the city, and for the house to which I'll go." When I read that, I am struck by the forwardness of Nehemiah. Down south, we'd say, "Man, he's got a lot of gall." I don't know if you use that term up here. I've just never really heard it. Man, he's not asking for a piece of cake. He's asking for the whole cake. Wow. He doesn't just ask to leave to go to Jerusalem and work. He says, "Hey, I want your seal of protection upon me as I move through the outer provinces. And, Your Majesty, if it be possible, can I have timber from your forests that I'm going to need?" If you know anything about the geography of that part of the world, good timber's like gold. It's not like North America where forests abound everywhere. And he says, I'm going to need timber. And that's really asking for something of great value. But you see, Nehemiah's apprehensions are gone because he's now understanding that God is also working in the heart of this pagan king. And so he knows that he can be aggressive because he believes in the ability of God to do great and mighty things. Here is the lesson for us in this about an open door. Never place your own limits on the opportunities that God gives you. Never look at your own resources. Look at God's resources. Don't limit yourself. You don't want to look back on an open door and say, "Man, I wish I'd utilized that opportunity better. Man, I wish I'd have been more assertive, more aggressive once I knew God's will." Utilize the strength of an opportunity. And finally, understand the source of an opportunity. My favorite part of these eight verses is the last part of verse 8. And the king granted them to me because the good hand of my God was on me. In your mind, go back to verse 6. The king says, how long will your journey be? When are you coming back? The king considers Nehemiah a valuable friend, trusted him. Nehemiah could have said, whew, man, this sure worked out. Nice, fortunate set of circumstances that I happened to be in a place where I had a good friendship and relationship with this most powerful man on earth. He didn't give himself credit for that. He didn't give credit to chance. He said, glory to God for his hand being upon me. God is the one who gets all the praise and the glory. The king made the decision, but God gave the king permission to make that decision. The king may have signed the papers, but God is the one who granted the authority. The king may have been the one that said, here, you can have the timber, but Nehemiah is remembering God is the one that grew the trees. Our passion in seizing the opportunities before us should always be to give credit where credit is truly due. Be passionate about giving God the glory for the doors that he opens. In your zeal for the project, don't forget the praise. Nehemiah is saying, hey, be passionate about God's glory, because God's glory is what God is passionate about. What about the doors before you? Is there something God's called you to? Has the door not opened yet? Be patient. Remember, God's delay is not God's denial. If the door is open, be prudent as you walk through that door. And if God gives you the green light to go through that door, be passionate about it. For God is passionate about it. To come to the end, I want to also remind you that not only is God passionate about his glory, but God is passionate about you. He loves you so much that he gave his son on the cross for you. Jesus gets excited about you. Jesus said, I came to seek and save that which was lost. I went through the door of heaven to come to earth to seek you who were lost and to find you and to save you. If you've not given your life to Jesus, know that God is seeking you out because he loves you and he's passionate about you and wants to save you. Christian, God's opening the door. You be passionate about God. Let's pray. Father, as we are now coming to our invitation, we ask, Lord, that you would help us that may have the wait for the open door. Or those that are in the moment where the door seems to be open, but they don't know what to do. God, that you would give them the green light or the red light. And Father, that you would let us follow this example of Nehemiah that you provided for us in your word. And Lord, for the one that may need to find Christ today, Lord, reveal your passionate love for them that you sent your Son to die on a cross because of your love, that you are seeking to save them. Lord, bless this invitation now in Jesus' name.